Hello, I'm Dira Sujan. You're listening to Radio Netherlands Worldwide, and this is our very last English language radio broadcast. In this hour, we'll be saying farewell and thank you. Farewell to RNW as a radio station, and thank you to you, our listeners. Without your support over the years, Radio Netherlands would never have become the institution it has, known and respected the world over. Over the past weeks, you've let us know in massive numbers how much you've appreciated our radio programs and our internet coverage. Since our first broadcast on the 4th of February 1947, we've been on air for a staggering 23,887 uninterrupted days. Over that enormous stretch of time, Radio Netherlands has been many things to many people. We've provided information not just about Holland, but about countries where their own information networks weren't always working or allowed to work. We've provided entertainment and listener feedback. We've done news and background features and award-winning documentaries. And most recently, we've been involved with reporting on the personal stories around the world, especially those about human rights, development, and sustainable living. But for this look back at our long checkered past, let's start at the beginning, when Radio Netherlands Worldwide was still a Radio Nederland, to be found on the Hilversum marker on the dials of those fabulous old shortwave sets. Let's tune in to one of our longest-running programs, and one that's fondly remembered to this day, the light entertainment show, The Happy Station. Eddie Staats first brought it to the airwaves in 1928, when Radio Netherlands wasn't even a twinkle in anyone's eye yet. Eddie took it to the air on the call sign PCJ on the Dutch transmitters to what was then the Dutch Indies. Radio then was a distant ancestor to radio as we know it today. Presenters dressed up for the microphone, and studio sound effects were all the rage. And the host wasn't above singing his own signature tune.
There they come. Happy with Pappy. Bright and breezy in Pasha. Bringing in the mail. And Van Flander is blowing the bugle, the post horn.
Do re mi fa sol la ti.
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning. For to start the day you see. And at half past 11, well, my idea of heaven is a nice.
Eddie and his theme song retired 42 years later in 1970, and they were replaced by Tom Meyer, who brought his own style to the tradition of song and light entertainment, introducing the big band sound to the Hilversum studios.
Hello.
Hello.
Here's the Happy Station show, calling listeners everywhere. Your station of smiles across the miles, spreading happiness all can share. Whether your transmission is HM or B, you're welcome to the world's largest happy family. So hello everyone, hello everywhere, from Alaska to Mexico. Come and join in the swing and have a merry fling with the Happy Station Family Show.
Tom Myers sang his way through 22 years of weekly episodes of the Happy Station before he in turn was succeeded by Pete Myers, who we'll get to in just a bit. But it's worth mentioning here that the Happy Station influenced so many listeners for so long that we're still, 84 years after it first went to air, we are still getting letters from listeners saying they miss it. And in fact, listener Keith Perrin so loved the show that he revived it for his own radio station, which he named PCJ in honor of Eddie's old call sign.
Back in the 1980s, I didn't just merely listen to programs. I also listened from a technical standpoint on how they were edited, mixed, and presented. It was like taking a radio course on how to produce programming. I feel as if I'm losing a teacher. You may not know this, but Radio Netherlands, I am forever grateful for everything you have given me.
seeing you.
Listener Keith Perrin following the old Happy Station tradition on his own call sign, PCJ. It was in the 1980s that Radio Netherlands began to change course, moving away from light entertainment and more towards information and feature programs on radio, satellite, and later the internet. Our program director at the time was Jonathan Marks, whose legendary show, The Media Network, was considered the mecca for shortwave radio and media geeks everywhere. First a fan of Radio Netherlands, Jonathan came to Hilversum in the 1980s to join the station as a producer.
I learnt the ropes from some of the world's leading communicators of their day. International broadcasting is actually the most difficult kind of broadcasting there is, because you have to come up with something that can attract the attention of someone living in a different country, a different culture, different time zone, quite often a different season. To be successful, we had to be different and focus on the audience. We had to share ideas rather than shout them. We needed to find topics that built bridges of understanding rather than just items that divided us. And we had a unique opportunity to explain. We were extremely lucky, too. We had complete editorial freedom, which we knew didn't exist at other stations just a little way down the shortwave dial. And we had pretty good audibility, thanks to relay stations in Bonaire and Madagascar, as well as transmitters here in Holland, first in Lopik, and then out in the Flevopolder, just north of Hilversum. Overall, I believe we were successful in our day, and the fact that we got something like 125,000 letters and phone calls a year, in an era well before email, I think that shows that we were definitely on the right lines. Today's the last day that Radio Netherlands will use shortwave radio to build a bridge with its audience. I'm convinced that June 29th, 2012, will go down in history books as a milestone in media history. I'd like to record that it was enormous fun to work for this station, in my case for over 23 years. And it was a privilege to work with the best people on the studio side of the mic and for the best, most responsive audience you could ever wish for.
Jonathan Marks. During the 1980s, the undisputed king of radio here at R&W was the irrepressible, the incorrigible, and the unparalleled Pete Myers. When he came here in the 70s, he was already an established radio star from the BBC. He came to Holland for a quieter life, he said. But life was never quiet with Pete around. His booming laugh and his burnished voice haunted our corridors and our programs for years. He started a weekly program for Asia that soon became immensely popular, Asia Scan. His sidekick was Mike Bullen, and the two of them managed to make even the most mundane news entertaining.
Everyone will be pleased to hear that President Suharto has given the go-ahead for the dumping of old cars and buses into the sea, and thousands of old wrecks are being piled up at temporary dumping grounds.
Steer clear of them, Pete. You never know, they might be stock-taking.
Thank you. Well, there may be a little rust on my ignition, Mike, but I'm not that much of an old wreck yet. Anyway, Suharto's permission follows an appeal by fishermen for more pedicabs, those are bicycle-drawn rickshaws, to be dumped in the sea, because they attract large shoals of fish.
I always thought worms did the trick. Anyway, Suharto has pledged to get rid of all pedicabs as they're a nuisance, and so far over 20,000 have been consigned to the deep. Now old buses are heading the way of Davy Jones's locker.
And as for attracting more fish, well, it seems it works. The president himself hooked a 12-kilo fish in Jakarta Bay last week, and that convinced him that dumping old wrecks really does help catch the big ones.
That story sounds apocryphal to me. I think there must be a catch in it somewhere.
There is. I've already told you. A 12.5-kilo fish.
Goodbye, baby. So long, girl. I know you ain't gonna like it, but I'm stepping right out of your world. But I'm coming to your party, and I won't be able to stay, but I'm gonna kiss you. I one more time, then I'm going away.
Pete Myers went on to host The Happy Station for several years and later made some of our finest documentaries. He died in 1999. You're listening to the final English language broadcast of Radio Netherlands Worldwide. Today, we're taking you on a farewell tour of past programs and the people who made them. During the 1990s, Radio Netherlands had a regular lineup of specialist programs on science, media, Dutch society, and development. Ginger De Silva, also a Radio Netherlands long-timer, hosted a program about people around the world aspiring for a good life.
A good life looked far beyond aid and theory to how people everywhere tackle problems, like their housing, their water, educating their children, moving to another place, immigration. It looked at lives and culture and human resilience, how people tried to make a good life for themselves. It took great pleasure in bringing listeners along to far corners of the globe where they otherwise might not get a chance to go.
This is the last city of Ulumsume in Tor. Some 800 years ago, this was a bustling commercial hub in the heart of the then almighty Mongolian Empire. Now, nothing remains. Only some crumbling walls remain here, and now there's not a living soul inside. It's as lonely as you were on the moon.
Roque Santeiro is reputed to be one of Africa's biggest markets. It's a filthy, overcrowded place, overlooking the picturesque Bay of Luanda. You can buy everything here, from vegetables to appliances. Like in many other places in the Angolan capital, sex is also available for a price.
I'm currently standing in one of the smartest supermarkets of Dhaka. As the customers queue up to buy their groceries, they're not putting their shopping inside polythene bags. Instead, they're putting their shopping either in paper bags or in bags made out of jute.
Ponchos, ponchos and more ponchos. It's no surprise why this square in the center of the Ecuadorian town of Otavalo is called the Poncho Square. But there are also beds.
Sitting in the Barkor street, a group of monks chant Buddhist prayers. The Barkor is the root of a holy circuit around Tibet's most sacred shrine, the Jokhang Temple.
There were many surprising and wonderful stories on A Good Life that captured the essence of what Radio Netherlands was all about, and I hope will continue to be about, whatever form it takes in the future. Stories that made the world smaller, more human, more intimate.
Ginger De Silva. In the 1990s, Radio Netherlands started producing documentaries which went on to win major international awards. From war reporting to history, the arts and literature, our subjects range from the Declaration of Human Rights to Enid Blyton. But the goal was always to make it personal and to make it compelling storytelling. And the documentaries of Marijke van der Meer were always compelling.
The finest compliment I ever got came from a grade school teacher in America who asked me for a copy of my documentary on the meat industry so she could play it for her pupils. The program, Bringing Home the Beef, won an award and I became a vegetarian in the process of making it. But the reason why the letter from the school teacher touched me was the thought that something we were saying might actually change the way people think. I believe one of the most essential tasks of any human being is to hand over knowledge, to transfer insight, wisdom, maybe even, to each other, and especially to the next generation. My proudest moment came in 2006 when I went to Times Square in New York City one evening to pick up a gold medal for a program about just that, about an old and wise professor at Leiden University who twice a year took groups of American and Dutch students to the World War I battlefields of the Western Front.
And what you can see here in the First World War is what civilized people, well-educated people, can do to each other.
Professor Koch told me later that it wasn't until he listened to the program that he realized how deeply the students were affected by what he taught them. The ultimate honor for a communicator.
Turn on the radio. We'll play it way down.
There's a tear in your eye that's reflecting the fire's glow. And I wish this night would never end. The sun ain't gonna be my friend. Lying here waiting and wishing I knew.
You're listening to the final day of English language broadcasts from Radio Netherlands Worldwide. I'm Dira Sujan. After today, we'll be going on as a website only at rnw.nl. But as far as our radio broadcasts go, this is our swan song. We're bidding farewell and thank you to our dedicated listeners. Over the years, my colleagues and I have often discussed your letters, messages and comments and feel we've got to know many of you personally. In the next half hour, we're going to be hearing from some of the program makers whose documentaries and reports made the Dutch International Service famous the world over. Another one of Radio Netherlands' longtime producers is Chris Chambers, who joined us in the 90s, and he spent years unearthing some of the Netherlands' most fascinating secret stories.
I first set eyes on the Radio Netherlands building here in Hilversum way back now in the autumn of 1997. I came along for an interview and, yeah, I don't mind saying, I was a bit ambivalent about working here. But as soon as I saw the wonderful setting in this wood, my attitude very quickly changed. I'd been used to the dark old labyrinths of the BBC's broadcasting house in London, and there's very little natural light there. And here I was, being shown around these huge recording studios with these massive windows looking out onto mature trees. So I made the decision to stay, and it's one of the best decisions, I think, of my life. But also, I'd been given the chance to make documentaries. I concentrated on mainly Dutch stories, mostly cultural, historical. And did you know that Mozart came to the Netherlands when he was just 10 years old, and he almost died here?
He was so weak that he couldn't stand on his legs. They had to teach him to walk. He was nothing. During a whole week, he didn't speak one word. He was just lying down. He had no forces anymore, even not to speak. Anyhow, the illness of the children gave the possibility that they could stay for the big celebrations at the court for the inauguration of the Prince of Orange.
That program was called A Dutch Divertimento in Six Movements. Yes, I know, pretentious titles, but hey, why not? But I think the documentaries that made the most impact on me were those that I made about the Second World War. There were quite a few of them looking at the impact of war, and there's something very, very humbling about sitting opposite someone who's telling a harrowing personal story. It really helps to put things into perspective. The person, I think, who made the biggest impact on me was this wonderful lady called Trudy van Reemst. I went to her apartment in Amsterdam where she lived alone. She was in her 90s, but she had this very soft, penetrating voice, and I'll never forget what she said to me. I made a program called Westerbork's List. Now, Westerbork was the holding camp for Jews in the Netherlands before they were transported to the death camps in Eastern Europe. Very few people survived. But Trudy did, and she told me this story.
The commander, Gemmeke, he said always he loved children. And this baby came with his mother to Westerbork. She was 6 months pregnant and she got the baby. So Gemmeke sent for a Jewish professor of children's illness. And he ordered special food, and he had to have a glass of cognac. So Gemmeke sent for the best brandy there is, and there were two nurses responsible for the baby. I was one of them. And Gemmeke looked through the window every day. And for us, he does everything to keep this little life. It meant for us a lot. we thought, well, there's hope. And when he was 5 pounds, he went to a crib. And when he was 6 pounds, he went to transport. Gemke did some stupid things. He made a transport only of children. And he gave all the children a tomato. And that was extraordinary because there was nearly no food for. But he knew exactly what happened with the children.
You're listening to the final English language broadcast from Radio Netherlands Worldwide. I'm Dira Sujan, and I'm your host on this journey through our past, highlighting some of our favourite programmes and the producers who made them. One of the best things about working here at Radio Netherlands has always been the international atmosphere. It's wonderful going to lunch in a canteen where you can hear half a dozen languages being spoken. And even within the English department itself, we had a kaleidoscope of cultures, people from backgrounds ranging from Sierra Leone to Ireland. Hélène Michaud is French-Canadian, but worked with the English department for years.
For me, it all started with making live current affairs programs on shortwave to Africa, in French, and then in English. The last days of apartheid, the genocide in Rwanda, the war in Liberia. That's when I produced my very first radio documentary in Uganda. It was about the Asians who'd been expelled by Idi Amin returning to a place they considered home.
I miss it so much. Whenever winter comes here, I always think about Uganda. It's my birthplace. It was at the back of my mind that one day when things settle down, I'll go down there.
That building on the right, which is a bright green color, is my old school, my primary school. This whole area used to be owned by the Asian community. And then further up on the right is the Sikh temple. And when the expulsion was taking place during the last few days of the expulsion,
they are coming back. They have established some more industries. Our people have been redundant. We now get employment.
And you don't think that this will foster more intolerance or misunderstandings between the two communities?
No, we are not expecting that.
At Radio Netherlands, if you had a good idea, you could produce documentaries on almost any topic you thought could interest the rest of the world. Boy, did I ever enjoy digging deep into those topics, from the idea of millennium and the end of the world, neighborhoods in the Philippines where every family had someone working abroad. Another topic was my own fear of flying, or the clandestine birth of community radio in South Africa, two gypsies in the Netherlands.
In this country, in Holland, in the old days, when gypsies came into a town, the mothers shouted at their children, come inside, because gypsies steal children. Can you imagine what an impact that has on a child? We don't need to steal children. We have children enough of our own, and beautiful children.
The Gypsy in My Soul. This was one of the most gripping documentaries I ever produced. I always shiver when I think about one moment in that program. And I shivered once more when I listened to it again.
We were standing on the platform of the train station in Assen. When the train came in with all the gypsies aboard and also many, many Jews, there was my whole family. I saw a little blue jacket hanging there, and I recognized it as my sister's jacket. And I saw my father and my mother. And you see, in Westerbork, the Germans didn't shave the heads of the people. that was done in Auschwitz, but the gypsies were all shaved, they were all bald. And my mother had the most beautiful hair in the world, I can tell you that. And the last time I saw her, she had no hair, nothing at all. The train stopped at the station. And my father shouted to his sister, "Muzla, Muzla, take care of my little boy." But we had to go into that train also. That good policeman helped us escape under the eyes of the Germans from that platform into another train, and we didn't know where we were going. And I still remember that train and those doors. We escaped.
I never saw Sonny Weiss again, but he's always with me. Looking back now, it seems that the quest for identity ran as a constant thread through my programs. I've been here for many years at Radio Netherlands, but it doesn't feel long because I've been given a chance to explore almost every corner of the world. For a person who's naturally curious, this has been fantastic. I'm saying goodbye to those years and to great and inspiring colleagues, but not to Radio Netherlands. I'm one of the few who's staying on with a new African service where I coordinate thematic programs in French and English in partnership with hundreds of radio stations in Africa. We no longer broadcast, but we interact, we exchange to help support Africa's rapidly evolving media landscape. A time will come, soon I think, when we will no longer be necessary.
As Hélène was saying, Radio Netherlands' presence in Africa will be continuing on the web and via local stations on the African continent. On this last day of Radio Netherlands English language broadcasting, we're looking back at our programs over the years. Stay tuned if you can. You're listening to the final day of English language broadcasts from Radio Netherlands worldwide. I'm Dira Sujan. In the 1990s, one of our slogans was Radio Netherlands, the European station with a Dutch accent. Coverage of European affairs has long been part of our output. Together with other European broadcasters, we co-produced the programme Weekend Europe, and one of its hosts was our own Louise Williams.
You're listening to Radio Netherlands, the Dutch international service. Weekend is coming up after the news and Newsline. This week we have a report from Sarajevo about how people are going about designing new flags and picking new football teams for their new republics. The report asks the people of Sarajevo if they still feel attached to the old national symbols. And from the Netherlands, there's a report about Dutch consumers' lack of interest in eating chemical-free vegetables. Guests are in studios in Dublin, Stockholm and London to discuss these subjects and more. But first, over to the Radio Netherlands newsroom.
After Weekend Europe came Network Europe. Richard Walker was one of the hosts, and the programme was a complicated operation involving fellow broadcasters all over the continent. So sometimes things didn't go exactly according to plan.
This is Network Europe, news and culture from the Euronet partnership, with Richard Walker and Cynthia Taylor.
We'll have to do that again.
Pumi was sentenced along with a Chinese man in the southern city of Guangzhou. Emmanuel Athanasiou.
And Network Europe's Korab Jorgakieski went. And Network Europe's Korab. I can't say his name.
Okay.
Maybe they were, you know, foreign.
Definitely gonna have to cut that bit out.
Just a reminder that this is the very last English language programme produced by Radio Netherlands Worldwide, and in honour of the occasion, we're doing a speed tour through our archives. We always got a great response from our programmes about the quirkier sides of Dutch culture. Our most recent incarnation of this programme was Curious Orange, which was hosted by the peppy duo of the Dutch insider Michel Walraven and the Canadian outsider Ashley Elson.
Yep, it's us.
We're back.
Hey, why don't we take a look in the Curious Orange audio vault?
I think that's a brilliant idea, Michelle. What were some of your highlights?
Oh, well, that's easy. I think for me, the highlight was our basically the whole trip to Afghanistan that we took.
The entire trip, right?
Yeah, highlight all the time.
I'm Ashley Elson, the outsider, the airborne Canadian. This week on the show, Afghanistan. Right now, via helicopter.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible. But our favorite story there, maybe the guy that was searching for roadside bombs. That was pretty impressive.
We know the danger, but it's not really worth thinking about the danger all the time. Because, well, I'm not done with some kind of robot, but I get to switch it off.
Yeah, or what about, remember those girls who worked in the morgue?
Oof.
And they came back to Afghanistan more than once.
After a few hours, the ice will sink into the head. And then it's looks like you have holes in your head, so we have special caps for it, so it looks like the eye is still in there. So
it was an amazing trip with some really powerful and sad, like that last one, and funny and scary yeah. stories.
So Ashley, what stories stick out in your mind?
It's really tough to pick just one, but one of the most interesting interviews I did was with the prostitute in Utrecht. You may remember Joey.
Oh, Joey, yeah.
One of the questions I asked her was whether her job ever made her uncomfortable anymore.
Not anymore, no.
At first, did it make you uncomfortable?
Oh, yes. And sometimes I cry also.
Do you feel that way now ever?
If I'm coming in my room, first I have to transform in Joey. Forget everything. And then it's okay. But when I'm free, then everything goes.
So do you have a family outside of this?
I have a son and a boyfriend, yeah. And that's very difficult. The combination with this job, it's very difficult. Also for my son.
How old is your son?
16.
And so he knows?
He knows, yeah. I told him, because it's better that he hear it from me than he hear it from another person.
And what does he think about it?
He's not happy about it, but he knows why I'm doing it, so to be honest, I do it for the money. It wasn't necessary, otherwise it was more problems. But now I'm sitting in it, so now I want to save something and then stop. But I can't wait for the day that I say goodbye. I think 1 year and then it's the end. A happy end.
Man, I guess it took a lot of guts to just talk to this woman, didn't it?
I will never forget it. But let's be honest, that was definitely not the only time we ever talked about sex on Curious Orange. Remember the sex with robots story that you did?
Oh, yeah, that's way back. I believe that was our very first show.
First ever.
Yep.
We are the robots.
It'll be possible to teach robots everything in every sex manual ever written. And so one of the dangers is that robots might in general be superior lovers to all humans, and this could cause a lot of problems, particularly for men, because of course men are always worried about their sexual performance, and it's not very nice for a man to have a relationship with a woman knowing that she's already had the best sex ever from a robot, and he's feeling right from the beginning, how am I going to satisfy this woman?
This was not just a crazy guy. This was David Levy from the University of Maastricht, and he wrote a thesis about sex with robots.
God, so many great stories we did on this show, and sadly, so little time to share them all with all of you again.
But they're still online.
That's true, where they will hopefully stay forever in our Curious Orange archive via, get out your pens and papers, blogs.rnw.nl/Curious Orange.
Well, and that's really it for us, signing off forever. Bye-bye, world.
And thanks for listening.
Ashley Elson and Michelle Walraven, who together were Curious Orange. Radio Netherlands was never shy of casting a critical eye on Dutch culture as well. We had acerbic commentators like Rob Green and his successor, Perra de Jong, who filed a weekly column where nothing was too sacred to mock.
When I first started writing these critical eye columns, the Netherlands was still in shock over the murder of controversial filmmaker Theo van Gogh. He'd been knifed to death in an Amsterdam street, with a note stuck to his body making it look like the fundamentalist Islamic equivalent of pin the tail on the donkey. To make matters worse, our then Justice Minister believed the best way to halt such shenanigans was by reviving an ancient blasphemy law and using it against anyone who had anything nasty to say about Allah. All of which gave me the feeling that at that particular point in our history, the traditional Dutch value of free speech was under unprecedented threat. Now, by the end of my run as a commentator, one leader of a Dutch political party had vowed never to speak to Radio Netherlands again unless a column of mine was removed from the internet. And, in an eerie parallel to Theo van Gogh, one of our regular listeners had promised me a knife in the back or worse, if I ever had the audacity to travel to her part of the globe. So, I guess I must have been doing something right. And I guess that really I should be proud that my radio station is now about to reinvent itself as a bringer of free speech to all parts of the world where it's in short supply. Oh dear, now how do I say this politely? The government that's been behind Radio Netherlands' extreme makeover is also the first Dutch government that's jumped into bed with both the populist PVV and the Christian fundamentalist SGP. About the former, well, as I once suggested, the greatest danger Geert Wilders' lot present is not that they're a one-issue party that bashes Muslims, but that they're not a one-issue party and will go looking for new scapegoats, judges, journalists, Brussels, whenever it proves convenient. And about the SGP, well, surely there's a place in the Guinness Book of Records for a Prime Minister who calls himself liberal, yet is thick as thieves with a party that would bar women from Parliament. I mean, with friends like that, who needs the Taliban? But back to Radio Netherlands, where our great new role as purveyors of free speech doesn't just mean in with the new, but also inevitably out with the old. What I do know is that the new Radio Netherlands has quite a challenge ahead of it, with those remaining on board expected to be living examples of a value that the Netherlands itself has too often been half-hearted about, to say the least. All that's left for me to do is to toast the colleagues who, like me, are going on to other and no doubt greater things, and to wish the Latter-day Saints who remain here luck. I think we're all going to need it.
Perra de Jong. Marnie Chesterton joined us from the BBC back in 2006, bringing with her a lovely presentation voice and a wry and dry sense of humour.
I came to Radio Netherlands as a science radio producer for a show called The Research File. But the bulk of my time here has been spent on a show called Earthbeat. It's my baby, and I'm so proud of how it's grown over the years. It used to sound like this. Ah, synth-based bedding music, so early 90s. But over time, the show's changed. You see, tell people you work on an environment show and they think you mean stories about saving the rainforest, solar panels and turtle conservation projects. And believe me, we did all of those stories. But this interpretation is kind of limiting. It's a bit predictable, it's a bit worthy, and it's a bit removed from how most of us live. But interpret environment as the world around you, and suddenly you open the show up to stories about history, architecture, sociology, technology, art, culture, psychology. Anything we humans have had our sticky little fingers on is suddenly fair game, and the show becomes a lot more fun. Even when we pick a subject like the demise of our species. We're talking about the end of the world in this week's show, which, as writer Joel Stickley shows, is no excuse for not separating your recyclables. This is The Apocalypse, as brought to you by your local council.
Dear resident, with the complete collapse of human civilization just around the corner, you're probably wondering about the schedule for recycling pickup in your area. We're pleased to tell you that this service will continue, albeit with a few changes. The brown bin will continue to be used for garden waste, but will now also accommodate masonry, empty shotgun casings, and the ashes of what used to be treasured possessions. The blue bin will be used for not only paper and cardboard, but also a secret stash of clean water and an array of improvised weaponry. Bottles and jars still go in the green bag, which will also be available for the disposal of body parts.
But we don't just make stuff up. The bulk of the show comes from interviewing people from all over the world about the wonderful, sometimes crazy things they do. Like Eustace Conway, the last wild American, telling us how living off the land isn't all sweetness and light.
I've wrestled deer to the ground myself with my own hands and fought them, stabbing them and being covered in their blood and my blood as we're fighting together, and that severely puts you in touch with your groceries.
Or Jasper Lawrence trying to catch a parasite to cure his allergies.
I know this sounds eccentric, you know, madman goes to Africa, takes his shoes off and walks around in people's poop. It was a great deal more considered and thoughtful than that.
Throughout it all, I've learnt about a host of amazing people out there. They're all looking at how we live and wondering, do we have to do it this way? I wonder, is there another, better way? I hope to listeners that I represented the silent majority on this planet, the billions who probably aren't going to invent some wonderful, better, sustainable way of living, but who, equally, don't want to make too much of a mess for future generations. The key to living better is understanding how we live now, and I'm so pleased I've had the chance to investigate this for 4 happy years. And I'm so sad it's coming to an end. Cue music. I'm off to find a sustainably sourced handkerchief to wipe away the tears. Thanks for listening. This is Marnie Chesterton. It's been a blast.
Earthbeat will go on for one more month, and then, unfortunately, it too will hit the recycling bins. And as for myself, well, for 23 years, I've thought of Radio Netherlands as my home, as my family. But most importantly, the microphone I wielded was my passport into people's lives. My wonderful Sennheiser microphone, still the same one after all these years, has recorded so many stories, and many of them have stayed with me. I met Shabnam Ramaswamy nearly 20 years ago in the New Delhi slum where she'd started a school for the poorest children.
What I'm doing is not even a drop in the ocean. The problems are so enormous. But should that stop a human being from starting? I'm not going to paint a rosy picture. I never even tell the children that I'm teaching you doesn't mean you'll get employment, because you know what our country is like. But what I believe in is walking tall. The child who is educated here is a Shushan boy tomorrow even, He walks tall in those streets. Nobody kicks him around. No police beats him. Nobody harasses and takes away his daily income. I have to teach them the difference between admiration and flattery. How to enjoy a sunset. The understanding of the world. The understanding of why they are born poor. And why they'll remain like this maybe in a country like ours. And yet, as I said, walk tall and walk with pride.
I've always empathized with my interviewees, laughing with them, living through their stories as they told them to me. There are stories that broke my heart, like this group of old soldiers who told me about their experiences in the Indonesian War of Independence. Some of them said to me afterwards that doing this interview was the first time they'd faced their own demons.
And the lieutenant said, just kill him. And I said, no, you can't do that. But I didn't prevent another soldier from killing him. So that was just real murder without a court of law. No, just kill him. I didn't prevent it. That follows me. That pursues me. Eh?
One of our men shot a young man, but he was still alive. And we asked him to say where the group was, and he wouldn't speak. And I have ordered to kill him. I can't forgive it myself now that I have done so.
On the job, I've learned history by making programs on Peter the Great and the Dutch East Indies Empire. I've visited refugee camps and palaces and learned how people adapted to the most extreme conditions, like the Fuchs Taylor family who live in the Australian outback on a cattle station the size of a European country called Yuen. And it was here that I learned just how big a landscape could be, about the redemptive power of being alone, and that there's no place for squeamishness on the far edge of nowhere.
Look at that goanna. Is it a goanna?
Yeah.
It's the biggest. It is a lizard, about what, 3 feet long?
4 feet to the tip of his tail. And he's a bungara. And he will eat dead sheep or rabbits or kittens or anything.
He's huge and he's got a tongue that's about 8 inches long. Oh, look, and he's walking on his four legs. It is just the most amazing sight. It's not like the ordinary house lizard. He's enormous. Look at him go. Woo! What do you want this kangaroo for?
For the cats and dogs.
Oh. You got him. Not dead, though. I want to see this. There's a hole in him the size of my fist. Oh, God. I don't know. I'm not country born and bred. I can't deal with this. Out come the knives. Skinning time.
But you better not watch this then.
No, I've got it. It's part of my job. I've actually never seen anything like this before in my life.
Oh, rubbish.
I haven't. No, I haven't.
What about every time you go to the butcher shop?
I thought meat came in little packages. All his guts are coming out. Oh, God.
There's simply not enough time to pay tribute to the people, the places, the stories that have given my life meaning over these years. But I would like to leave you with one last clip from a program that seemed to have hit a particular chord with listeners, maybe because it featured a familiar voice, my colleague Jonathan Gruber. The program was about his romance with his wife, Dragana, and it featured Brooklyn Jewish ebullience with a gloom of Slavic Banja Luka.
Me sechina, me sechina, yoy, 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 yoy. Soon se siya, yo yo yo, yo yo yo. Listen to that. Niko ne znam, no one knows. Niko ne znam, niko ne znam, niko ne znam, niko ne znam. And then listen to these horns. And the Serbs just love this. They love it. And why shouldn't they? You know? It's fantastic.
Radio Netherlands presents From Brooklyn to Banja Luka.
Ba-na-na-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum.
Okay, for instance, if a guy is really sad and he really wants to show the world that he's alive, gets drunk, and then he goes and finds himself a gypsy bed and pays them, and then he runs through the streets with a bottle of rakia, which is this plum brandy, very strong. This is following him. Ah, look at me, I'm alive! The whole world hates us! But we're wonderful! And they are. And the whole world doesn't hate them, but they have a Jew complex. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You'd think the world was persecuting them for 2,000 years. And of course it's not. The world doesn't even know where Serbia is.
On a personal note, I want to say that my 23 years here has been a great ride. Thank you, Radio Netherlands, for allowing me to find marvelous stories from around the world. And thank you, listeners, for letting me tell them to you. But before we go, it's important that you know that all these stories we've gathered and shaped into radio programs are not going to simply disappear. Even as we speak, we're busy combing our extensive archives to select the very best of Radio Netherlands programs. They'll be stored for posterity on our site, www.rnw.nl. Please feel free to fish them out, use them as teaching aids, listen to them online or on iPod or whatever new devices will be invented in the future. Because as we know very well here at Radio Netherlands, no one can live without stories. And though most of us will no longer be here in the new incarnation of Radio Netherlands, the stories we've made will never die. Rob Kiewit was responsible for the immense undertaking of delving through our archives for the making of this program, and engineer Rick Kingmar for putting it together. I'm Dira Sujan. On behalf of my colleagues, past and present, I'd like to thank you all for listening and wish you one final goodbye from Radio Netherlands Worldwide.